Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I am glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope that something you hear in the next hour lights you up and helps you move forward. Now, before we get started today, I want to send out an enormous loving shout of gratitude to Shan Vanderleek. I've been away for the last few weeks recovering from surgery, and Shan very graciously filled in for me here. If you enjoyed listening to her, I would guide you to check out anxietyslayer.com to hear more of her work, and you can also head over to shanvanderleek.com to hear more about the wonderful things that Shan is creating in the world. Now, my guest on today's show is Chris Sade. He has witnessed a remarkable phenomenon, a new wave of spirituality that is socially and globally engaged in the pursuit of justice, earth care, and solidarity. He calls this new movement second wave spirituality, and he's here today to share some cutting edge ideas to help us reimagine our response to the divine, to begin to put love in action. Are you ready to meet him? As co-director of the Olive Branch Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, Chris Sade teaches courses on engaged spirituality and the mysticism of inclusion. He's the founder of the Institute for Life Leadership and Coaching, where he's the senior trainer for heart-centered psychological and spiritual leadership programs. He's the author of Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice, and his new book, Prayers from the Heart, Love, Sacred Activism, and Praise, will be out very soon. You can find out more about Chris and his work at theolivebranchcenter.net. Chris, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Good morning, Karen, and I hope I just heard that you came from surgery, so I hope your recovery is going well.
Oh, my goodness, it is. One of the hardest things for me, Chris, is to sit still. That's a learning path for me. And so for me to have those weeks off the air where I was just sitting very quietly was kind of a wonderful growth experience,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So how can you let us know a little bit about your personal journey, about how you came to this place on your path?
Sure. I was born in Beirut, Lebanon, and that's a long time ago. I'm 64 years old now, so... in Lebanon, I was born into a Christian family, and very early on, at the age of 13, I co-founded and joined a Christian peace-building group, and we worked in Lebanon. We worked in the ghetto areas. We worked in Palestinian refugee camps. We worked in the southern borders of Lebanon, where there was a lot of fighting going on. So I was very immersed in that in that kind of approach to life, which is peace building and looking at life through the angle of love, and where we learned from Jesus at that time, that you know we have to live the love that is in our hearts. And then when the war broke out in Lebanon, it broke out in about 1972. It was a long war and very, very destructive war. I kept on working with the peace movement then for about 7 years of that war. And that was a very, very important lesson for me, a very important awakening. Karen, I saw so much destruction. I mean, so much destruction and the suffering of the children. And in our family, we lost everything, and it was quite of a difficult path for us. However, on the other hand, I saw an unbelievable outpouring of love. It's like the worst and the best in human beings came out. And the love that was there, I mean, people were compassionate with each other. People were risking their life to help each other. People were reaching out to enter in partnership, in communion with others. So at a very young age, I realized that there are two forces that are struggling for dominance in our world, force of destruction and then an immense force of love. So as I journeyed, and then I became a psychotherapist, and I became a psychological coach, and became a spiritual teacher, but I was very interested to see what is happening at an evolutionary level in our world with these two forces. And of course, what I discovered was that the force of destruction is getting more and more powerful, and we see it with the ecological challenges, we see it with the economic accaparation of wealth in the hands of very, very few organizations. We see it with what's happening with children poverty and all of that. On the other hand, what I saw and I studied and I followed was that there was an amazing movement happening in the spiritual world, evolving our ideas and getting us to that place of love and action. And it's a movement that is global, that is seen in all religions as far as I can tell. And it's a movement that we need to notice and that we need to realize that we who care about the heart and the spirit are part of something that is evolutionary big and also globally significant.
And that we are in that movement now, that we are part of, participants in that movement now, whether or not we are realizing it. And so the choices are ours to make.
Exactly. I mean, this what you're saying, that we are part of it, is so important. Because one of the things that I think most spiritual journeyers struggle with is a sense of isolation and disconnection, feeling that many times we feel like, you know, we are concerned about the earth, we are concerned about justice, we are concerned about democracy, but we feel kind of isolated. But the reality is that we are part and parcel of an emerging movement that is a historical first, and that is so powerful, that is shifting the lay of the land as far as spirituality is concerned, as far as many religious thinking is going on. And I mean, an example would be Pope Francis. Pope Francis, that is starting to speak about justice and about human rights, and more than we've ever heard, for example, from the Vatican. That is one of the examples. We have Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma, that is, from a Buddhist perspective, getting engaged for democracy and calling on Buddhists to take a stand for democracy and for freedom and for justice. So we are part of a shift, an evolutionary shift in the way we think, that has tremendous possibilities if we keep on supporting it, feeding it, and nurturing it.
Well, and it's about making that choice. You were talking about the force of destruction and the force of love. As we make that choice for love, to act in love, respond in love, that's what drives that evolution. Do you feel, Chris, from your observations, from your experience, has this tide of love is moving over us in such a way that it cannot be undone? Or are we still at the threshold, still at a place where things could go the other way?
Wow, that's a very powerful question, Karen. I mean, I would like to say yes to both, in a sense that the evolution of our understanding of love as love in action, as love as the pursuit of freedom, the pursuit of peace, the pursuit of justice, the pursuit of human rights and solidarity, that kind of shift that is happening in our spiritual thinking is so powerful that it cannot be undone. We have shifted in a whole new level of our understanding of spirituality. Now, will that be strong enough to save the human race, so to speak, to save us from the suicidal path that we are on with what we're doing, the abuse we're doing to the earth, and the ecological crisis and the economic crisis and the crisis in fundamentalist extremism? Nobody knows. We'll have to see. However, we need to realize that this shift in our spirituality toward the freedom of our spirits and the understanding of love as the pursuit of justice is so powerful that it can awaken, and is starting to awaken, the giant, the sleeping giant of spirituality and people of good faith all over the world. So it has that possibility. It's like if that giant can awaken, it will have amazing, amazing power and potential to turn the tide toward the time of regeneration and a time of celebration of life rather than destruction of life. But we'll have to see. I mean, no one knows the future. It is, it's very serious. It's very serious, very important, very scary, and very beautiful at the same time.
How would you characterize, if this is the second wave, spirituality, how would you characterize the first wave? How would you characterize the way things are before this kind of tide washes over us?
You know, in the 70s, we had a first wave of spiritual awakening that was quite powerful. It kind of shook the religious establishment and opened a lot of minds and hearts to realizing that the divine, in whatever name we give it, she or he, lives within us, lives within our hearts. It awakened us to the fact that there isn't one truth, but all the paths that are sincere lead us to the experience of the divine and to the experience of our spirituality. So there was a wave in the 70s that opened us up to knowing God as love, knowing that God is within us, and knowing that we don't have to be divided, that we can join hands across different faiths. And that was a very powerful shift in our thinking, and it started spreading worldwide. However, that first wave didn't go far enough. It wasn't able to realize the connection between our spirituality and the earth, the connection between our spirituality and the struggle for democracy, the struggle for justice, the struggle for rights, animal rights, minority rights, sexual rights, and so forth. There was still that split between the spiritual, seen privatized in a sense, seen as a relationship between the individual and the heavens, and not connecting that with the day-to-day struggle. But then, you know, we had, of course, Martin Luther King here in this country that was following on the path of Gandhi. We had Mother Teresa. We had in France a very powerful person who was like Mother Teresa, called Abbé Pierre or Father Pierre, that started to lay the foundation for a different way of thinking, for realizing that spirituality and the earth are one and the same, and that to be spiritual means to love, and to love means the pursuit of justice, means the pursuit of peace, means the pursuit of freedom, and that we cannot divide our spirituality from planet Earth and the fate of planet Earth. And that shifted us then into a second wave of spirituality. That took us beyond the privatization of first wave spirituality and the split between the spiritual and the earthly.
And there's a deeper awareness, I think, of how what I do, although this has always been true as I believe it, but a deeper awareness maybe of how what I do as a person affects the whole, because I think I can see that in a different way, feel it, see it played out on a bigger stage than maybe I could have 30 or 40 years ago.
That is so true. That is so true. And we are starting to realize that there is a gathering of people happening from all over the world. I mean, we have more young people today involved in humanitarian organizations than we have ever had in our history. I mean, the number of nonprofits has exploded all over the world. And not only in the United States, in Europe, in Africa, in the Middle East, in the Far East, we're seeing people getting involved, taking responsibility for their society. And we're starting to realize that we are part of a chorus of voices, and that every voice counts. that every voice counts, that when we put our voice out in our community, in our place of work, in our place of worship, when we put our voice out for a greater vision of compassionate justice, for example, that we are empowering that chorus. And you're very right. People are starting to hear the chorus. Not fully yet. There's more to be done. But they're starting to hear the chorus, and they're starting to hear that they are part of a chorus. And that is giving us good news, and it's giving us strength, and it's also giving us the joy of belonging, that we belong to something that is historical and worldwide, and that has the potential of shifting the trajectory of our history.
How do you, maybe this is too broad, I'm wondering how you define love, because the key of this is love in action. And sometimes when people say love, they oh, it's a teddy bear with a heart on it,
right,
or it's the nice card you send me, or it's blah, blah, blah. How do you define love in this context?
Well, you know, Karen, for a long time, love has been perceived as a, like you're saying, kind of a limited emotion and very privatized. That, you know, I have love for my family, which is very important. I have love for the animals in my life, which is very important. And maybe love for my neighbors and my community. That is kind of an opening of the heart, you know, toward those who are immediately around me. And that's a very important part of what love is. However, that is not all what love is. Love, we are coming to understand more and more, and people are speaking about it today. That's what is exciting, that it's being discussed and spoken about in so many different circles and in every faith, that love is a deep orientation of one's life. Love is a philosophy of life. Love changes everything in that sense. That when we look at planet Earth with love, when we look at the children who are suffering in the world, if it's from war or from famine, we look at them with love. When we look at the unemployed with love, when we look at the women who are denied their rights with love, when we look at children who are used for sexual abuse and sexual commercialism with love, when we look at the refugees and the people who are struggling undocumented in our society with love, then our perception changes. And then we realize that we are one with them, like we feel that with our children. I mean, when we look at our children with love, there's no separation between us and their children. We will stand for our children if they are bullied, if they are oppressed. We will stand with them and for them. We will support our children in their struggles. We will be there for our children, helping them have more justice in their life, more freedom in their life. But it has been limited to that. But now we're understanding it's the same thing. It's the same thing for everything. Like we would do anything for our children, we have to fall in love with the earth, like we love our children, and fall in love with the struggle for human rights and justice in the world. And that is a whole re-understanding of our oneness and our communion with all others. And it opens then the gates for love and action. Because love, like in our families, we don't say, I love you, but if you're hungry, I'm not going to, or if you're sick, I'm not going to bring you a cup of tea. Immediately, love translates into love and action when we're dealing with our children or our beloved ones or our dogs or cats. It's the same thing with the world, and we're learning that. We're getting that, that if we love, we have to act. And if we fall in love with the earth, then we have to stand by it with everything we've got.
And it takes love away from that kind of vaguely pleasant kissy-kissy feeling to something that is extremely powerful, that compels truth, compels light, compels the pursuit of justice. It takes love into that, into a deeper, broader connection. In my tradition, which is Christian, they might say that we come into the heart that is at the heart of the world.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautifully said. And I love that word, compels us. It does. Once we allow, you know, it's this crisis, this great crisis in the world is scaring us all. I mean, we are we are in real danger of not seeing the human race even survive if we continue with the folly of domination and oppression and exploitation and abuse of the earth. At the same time, this crisis is allowing us to open up to a deeper dimension of the understanding of love in our life that is empowering us and gifting us, because it allows us to partake with the majesty and the beauty and the magnificence of divine love. And so there is a great gift, a great opportunity for every one of us to change our life from just, like you said, a kissy-kissy kind of love, which has its place, but to open up to what Teilhard de Chardin said, the love that created all the universe and burst forth the galaxies, and to live in love, to live every day passionately in love with life and the challenge of life on planet Earth, on beautiful, sacred planet Earth.
And with that, I think, comes that knowing at a deep level that can be, I believe, revealed as we work our spiritual practices and are authentic on our journey, that understanding that it's not just us, that when I act in love, when I put love in action, it's more than just me. I think, is it Mother Teresa who said, let my hands be the hands of the divine, right? Through
right.
me, through my actions.
Right.
It's more than just me reaching out. It is the divine reaching out through me.
And that is part of that new understanding that we're getting. That, you know, I had that personal experience, Karen, when I left Lebanon after 7 years during the war and working in the peace movement and seeing so many children suffer and so forth. And then I went to France and then to Paris for several years, and then I came here to the States. And I never lost my faith in God. I never lost, because I had such a strong mystical connection with God that I couldn't lose it. However, I was very angry with God. I was very angry with God. I would say, God, I understand that you let adults pay the price of their choices, but what about these children? And I was so angry with God. I said, God, how can you let these children be maimed? And I was angry for about 4 years, until one day, in early morning, you know, between like when you're waking up and you're half asleep and so on. And I had this semi-dream that came to me where God was crying. God was weeping, and God was weeping for the children. And God looked at me and said, don't ask me what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you, what are we going to do? Because you are my hands, and you are my feet, and you are my voice. And I woke up so shaken. And I realized that we are the love of God that has to protect the children. We are the love of God that has to protect the animals. If we don't act, we paralyze God. And if we act, we allow God to then flood this planet, this beautiful planet Earth, with love. But we have to allow that great, passionate, immense love of God to flow through us. We have to allow that. We have to make that choice. As to allow God to respond to the crisis, and to allow God to respond to the fate of the children and to the fate of those who are oppressed. So what you're saying here about we being the, you know, that's something that Teresa of Avila said, and then Mother Teresa repeated, and so many speak, you know, we are the hands of the divine. And the Christian tradition, you know, we are the compassionate heart of the Christ. And that is what we're starting to understand. And it has implications in how we vote, in organizations we're part of, in speaking out for justice, has immense implications, and very exciting implications too.
Well, it's tremendous responsibility and tremendous joyful possibility, potential, right? Because what we can do as a collective is so much more powerful than what I can do just me by myself.
Exactly. There is tremendous joy in rediscovering our participation. That is the fundamental concept of the church. You know, the church as being the ecclesia, as being the community of people of heart and spirit working together as you know, one heart and same hands, that we have been so discover our belonging, that we belong to everyone today who is either speaking out or reaching out or working with the Ebola virus or working with refugee camps or working with Syria to bring peace, that we are one with them. There is no, these are our intimate brothers and sisters. Mm. And that is the restoration of the joy of belonging, that we belong. And some of us are called to put their hands, into direct action and be there with those who are sick or are impoverished. Some of us are called to speak or to write or to create art for justice, to create music for justice and peace, to create dance for that. We have different callings, but we are all part of that same movement that is emerging in our world for our world. And that's a great sense of joy,
yes.
the intimate belonging.
You are listening to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager. My guest is Chris Sade. We're talking about second wave spirituality, and we'll be right back after this.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha ha! I win! Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. My guest on today's show is Chris Sade. He's the author of the new book, Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice. And we've been talking about how we can put love in action, how our response to the divine, to that love that flows through us, can lead to individual change, but more importantly, changing the world. I would love to hear from you about how you put love in action. I'd love to know what you think of what you're hearing today. You can always get in touch with me through my website at karenhager.com. And now that I'm back in the swing of things, there's all kinds of delightful things happening over there, classes and events and all kinds of stuff. But I'd love to get your feedback on today's show. Find me at karenhager.com. Now, Chris, we were talking before we went to the break about that feeling of inclusion, that call to not only take action individually, but that understanding, that deep knowing that we are part of something that is bigger than ourselves. And I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about how that relates to people who might be feeling disenfranchised, feeling powerless, feeling like they are always getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah. I mean, there is unfortunately a lot of oppression in societies that are built on domination and exploitation. So there is a lot of oppression. There's a lot of people who are suffering. And the journey is going to take time. I mean, the journey is going to take time so we can start responding. But there is something I'm thinking about, Father Pierre that I mentioned in France that died several years ago, but was a great proponent of this love in action. He was coming from the Catholic tradition. And one thing he did that was so beautiful, he got thousands of people to join him into working and providing shelter for the homeless and building homes for the homeless. But what Father Pierre did that was so inspiring also, he called on the homeless themselves to build shelters for other homeless people. And his teaching was that every one of us needs to be involved. Every one of us needs to be involved. Every one of us needs to partake in the great communion and joy of love in action. That love in action is not a charity we give to others, but as a participation and something tremendously rich and tremendously mystical that holds the universe together. So Father Pierre said to everyone, and I think that that everyone needs to work together, even those of us who are suffering, who are deprived of our rights, to join with others in building a world where love can prevail. And I think that's a very powerful message that this is the time for everybody to make a difference. And that's where that great shift is happening. Because before we used to think, okay, you know, we're supporting a charity or we are voting or this is enough. But today we are realizing that every one of us needs to become a global citizen and every one of us needs to take responsibility for our world. And to find their calling, to find, like Andrew Harvey says so beautifully, find your greatest grief where your heart has been broken. And in that place, you will discover your calling.
Yes.
Out of your sacred grief, your heartbreak, you will find your calling. And every calling is different. Every calling is different because there is authenticity here. We have to hear our authentic voice and follow our spirit as our spirit talks to us. But do it in the understanding that we are every act of love, every voice of love for peace, for justice, is strengthening the voice of the chorus, and that chorus is tremendously important today.
Mm. And that, at least in my experience, in my journey as I've lived it, that love that we're talking about, that connection to the divine, the way that the heart of the world speaks to our heart, comes through suffering. And because it comes through suffering, because we express that love even from our own place of suffering or dis-ease or pain, that allows us to reach through that and affect the suffering of others, the suffering that goes on in the world. That it's not about, I'll sit here and wait until someone gives me something and then I'll be able to go and do good things in the world.
Right.
That it's because I am in pain, because I am suffering, because I'm at low ebb, that I am uniquely qualified to bring love in action into the world.
Yes. I mean, this is another thing that has shifted between first wave spirituality and second wave spirituality. Karen, as you know, in the first wave spirituality, we looked at grief or outrage as negative feelings. You know, we don't want to be negative. You know, we don't want to be sad. We don't want to be outraged. Or we don't want to be anguished. And today, with this worldwide development of second wave spirituality, we're realizing that our grief is sacred. And that out of the brokenness of our heart flows unbelievable waters of healing and transformation. And that we have to listen to our grief, and we have to listen to our outrage and our anger, and see what is the holy, the sacred desire that is being born in them. So that is also a very important shift, where we are becoming more at peace with our authenticity as human beings. Because as human beings, we have joy, we have peace, we have celebration, we have ecstasy, but we also carry grief. We carry the grief of everyone that is broken or that is sick or that is oppressed. We also carry anguish for our planet and what's going to happen to planet Earth, and outrage at oppression. And that all these feelings, all of them are sacred and all of them are important if we hold them with love. And that's a huge shift in our thinking. I mean, my God, how many books have been written to tell us that grief is negative. And now we realize our tears are the tears of the Holy Mother. Our tears are the tears of Mary. Our tears are the tears of the Goddess. Our tears are the tears of God. And that we have to really listen to that and allow that to transform us into agents of peace and agents of change. And this is something, if I may, I want to just put very quickly here, that the other part of this great worldwide movement, one is our re-understanding of love. The second is our understanding of authenticity and the freedom of the self. Because for a long time, we have been told, oh, the self is filled with sin, or the self is wrong, or careful about your ego, and this and that, that we have been paralyzed, not being able to be who we are. And today, there is a huge movement toward understanding that spirituality is about authenticity. Be who you are. Be the freedom of who you are and unleash yourself, unleash your passion as it is authentically. So that coming together of authenticity with love and action is creating an amazing electric fusion that has, like you said previously, has and is becoming more and more unstoppable.
That idea of allowing oneself to be seen, allowing oneself to to stand in our power, even knowing that we are flawed, we are grieving, we mess it up all the time, we're going to make mistakes, we don't have the things we feel like we ought to have, we haven't always made good choices. How can people begin to connect with that kind of authenticity without just getting overwhelmed and giving up? That's it. I'm going back to bed. Too much for me. All done.
Right. Well, I think two things here. First of all, as we are understanding how the earth is sacred and the earth is beautiful and the earth is numinous, that planet Earth is just an amazing miracle in the galaxies. We are rediscovering how the natural is sacred. So we are discovering how we as human beings are sacred and beautiful. And how, you know, we have been carved by hundreds and thousands of years of evolution. I mean, our hands, our eyes, our body, every part of our body has been carved by hundreds and thousands of years of evolution. We are handiworks of arts. We are amazing beings. And that's very different from what we have been taught for a long time, that, you know, we are flawed, we can't trust ourselves, we can't trust our heart, we cannot trust our instincts. And by the way, that's something that especially women teachers and theologians have brought us to realize, that we have to get out of that and out of sense of shame and guilt and reclaim the majesty and the beauty of ourselves and our bodies and then free them. You know, Matthew Fox speaks so beautifully about not original sin, but original blessing, how we are blessed to be human beings. So the first point in response to your question is, We have to reclaim the dignity of ourselves and then free ourselves, unleash the passion of ourselves, rather than constantly trying to redeem ourselves and make ourselves better, and then, you know, like one day I'll get better. Just realize that what already is in us, if we can free it, is amazing. That's number one. Number two is to realize that all greatness, discoveries in science, discoveries in art, discoveries in the financial world, all greatness comes with 100 mistakes and 100 setbacks. So we need to start realizing that setbacks and mistakes are part of the genius of our spirit. Defeats are part of the great victories. Anybody who's achieved anything in the world has known an immense number of defeats. So we need to re-look at that and say, we need to start celebrating our flaws and celebrating our defeats and celebrating our setbacks, because only great people have defeats and setbacks. People who don't dare to live passionately don't have defeats and setbacks and mistakes. They just sit back and do nothing. But anybody that runs is going to fall sometimes, but they're going to be great, beautiful runners. So it's a re-evaluation of the place of defeats and setbacks, and understanding that they are part of the glory and the beauty of being passionate human beings. Part of our authenticity, part of our sacred authenticity as human beings. It's reclaiming the dignity of the human being. As we reclaim the dignity of the earth, we reclaim the dignity of the human body, and then we reclaim the dignity of the human self. It's very good news. It's very good news. It's very liberating and allows us to celebrate not that one day we'll get somewhere, but who we are right now and this magnificent body and magnificent spirit and mind and heart that we have.
Yes. Yes, and one of the things that I like the most about this book, we're talking about Chris Sade's book, Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice. One of the things I like the most about the book is that you have wonderful practical suggestions, not all, hey, love one another, we're all connected to, you know, the divine consciousness. You've got practical things in there that we can be doing now, that we can start to do now to connect our loving response to the divine moving in our lives with concrete practical results in the world. Can you share some of those practical things that we can do like right now, like as soon as we're done listening to this interview?
Definitely. I mean, several things come to my mind right now. One of them is definitely find an organization that is working to better our world. If it is a humanitarian organization, if that's what your bent is, or if it's a political organization, or if it's an intellectual organization, find one of these non-profit organizations that are working to change the world, and join, be a joiner. Don't isolate yourself. Do it the way you authentically love to do it. If you're an extrovert, be an extrovert. If you're an introvert, you know, do things that are introverted. Do it the way you like to do things, but join an organization. These organizations are what we call civil society today. They are the counterbalance of the mega accumulation of money that is used for destructive ends. So these organizations are becoming tremendously important. So join one. Be part of one. The second practical thing is speak with the spiritual group that you're part of. Speak with the leader of that group or the teacher in that group, or write a letter to your minister and ask them in their speaking, in their teaching, to address issues of justice. You know, it's like we say, write to your Congress people, which is very important. That's another thing that we need to do, and thinking about an organization like Results that does that so beautifully by sending thousands of letters to Congress people and putting them together, and like their name is Results, they have a lot of very good results. But like we have to write to our Congress people, we have to write to our spiritual teachers, to our ministers, to our Jewish rabbis, to our imams, and tell them, address love in action in your speaking. Because these teachers will be influenced by us. And if we have more spiritual teachers that start to talk about, like Marianne Williamson, like Andrew Harvey, like Matthew Fox, you know, like so many of, or Adam Bucko, or, who are speaking about love in action, speaking about the holiness of justice and freedom and love being, freedom and justice being part of love. If we have more teachers and ministers speaking like that, we awaken that sleeping giant. So we have to not be passive. Go to them and say, we didn't talk about justice today. We had a three-day conference, and the word justice was not brought up. Can we devote an hour or two to talk about justice? So that's another something we can immediately do that will have a long-lasting effect. And the third thing is to think about how we mainly think about artists. I mean, so many people in the spiritual world are opening to the artistic realm. You know, they're rediscovering the painter in them. They're rediscovering the musician in them. Some of them are writing songs. Some of them are performing. Some of them are into sculpture. And my invitation is for artists to make sure that part of what they do has a direct message about justice and peace and solidarity. Because artists are so powerful. If you do 10 paintings, make sure that two or three of these paintings have a direct message about justice and peace. If you're writing songs, make sure that 20 to 30%, if not more, of these songs have a direct message. The power of art is unbelievable. But art has been separated from social engagement for a long time. Like, it has nothing to do. It has everything to do. Because art leaves images in our brain and in our hearts that never go away. So, like love has been privatized in the first wave spirituality, art has been privatized. So, you know, art is only about beautiful sceneries and maybe romantic things, which is very important, which is, has a place in our life. But art cannot be limited to that. Art has to be engaged. So if you're an artist, or if you are an aspiring artist, make sure that you allow your concern, whatever your concern is about animals, about refugees, about children, to be speak through your art. So you allow your art to become a voice for that, fueling the fire of your sisters and brothers.
And it's being willing to be heard, to maybe be a little controversial. I know from my experience in the institutional church that if I wrote to the clergy person and said, we want to talk about justice, they might say, well, no, because that's politics and people are going to disagree. And we're going to, no, we really can't have that. Let's talk about kittens and the baby Jesus and it will all be okay. And there's what you're calling people to is this is a kind of a conversation that we are not afraid to have, even when we know there's disagreements, not so we can shout each other down, but so that we can find that commonality even when we are coming from what feel like opposite places.
Yeah, that is so important, isn't it? I mean, conversation, that's the word. You know, all great cultural shifts have started with great conversations. And that's what we need. Like you're saying, great conversations, not shouting each other down, not, you know, raging at each other, but very lovingly conversing about that, you know, in the church, for example, asking the minister to reread the Magnificat by Mary. Mm-hmm. I mean, this young woman who, when she was told she was going to bear Jesus, started speaking about the one who's going to bring liberation to the poor and justice to the people. And saying, okay, you know, what about that? Let's talk about that. Rekindling a conversation. With respect, with love, but with firmness, saying we need to talk about these things. We cannot have a five-day retreat, and we never talk about the children who are suffering the abomination of wars and the abomination of poverty. 1 out of 5 in our country, the United States, is hungry. 1 out of 5 children is hungry. We cannot go pray and not talk about them, or not pray about them. And we can say, let's pray for these children. Let's pray for peace. Let's pray for justice. That will start it moving. But we have to put our voice out. We have to put our voice out. We have to allow this incredible, what a lot of us call the incredible outpouring of feminine energy in us, you know, the feminine arising in us again, both women and men, that is so compassionate, so caring, so bonded. We have to allow that to become words, or at least art, and then put it in our churches, and then put it in our synagogues, and keep that conversation alive so it becomes, again, that word that today is so important, unstoppable. I mean, our job is to make sure that that conversation becomes unstoppable. So not only millions, which are today involved in that second wave, but we will have billions involved in the second wave. And then we can imagine the possibility of reclaiming the earth for community, the earth for partnership, the earth for a sacred relationship between us and the land and the sea. But we need numbers, Karen. We need numbers. Numbers matter. They matter in any movement. And so when we put our voice out, if each one of us can get five people to awaken to that greater vision of love and greater vision of freedom of the self, five here and five here and five here, they add up, and then we'll have more people coming out on the big level, on the big scene. We'll have more celebrities, we'll have more big leaders starting to speak about it. And we will see the shift happening, because we're standing in the midst of an immense cultural shift around this love and action and freedom of the spirit. But we have to do our part and do it joyfully, do it with tremendous joy, tremendous celebration, tremendous recuperation of our freedom and the gorgeous nature of the earth.
Mm. Courage, and the courage to say, yes, yes, I will. Yes, I will in my own way. Yes, I will be seen. Yes, I will make a difference.
Yeah.
Yes, I will continue. Now, I'm watching our time slip away. There are days when I wish this show was 5 hours long. This is one of those days. I know that we have just a very few minutes left, and I'm wondering if you can tell people, when they connect with you and connect with your work at the olivebranchcenter.net, what will they find there? I know you've got a new book coming out. Do let us know what's coming up, how we can engage with you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, you know, if you go to the website at the Olive Branch, we are focusing on two things on the Olive Branch. Mainly now is putting out material around the second wave spirituality and around this development of what Andrew Harvey calls sacred activism or engaged spirituality. Putting out material and engaging in conversation. So we would love to hear your voice. You know, if you email me or go to the website, get the information and participate in that conversation, because I take every letter very seriously, because it's all about conversation. And the second thing we do is we do offer retreats every year that look at the psychology of authenticity, social justice, and the spirituality of inclusion. So we bring these three together, and I've been co-leading such retreats for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. I've co-led more than several hundreds of them. So
wow.
They're very powerful, and they bring people from different areas who want to delve into that. So if you want to be with us, we would love people to join us in that. But the main thing is the conversation. I am. Right now, I have one book that is out. It's an audio book, actually, on audible.com, and it's called Prayers from the Heart. And then these prayers bring together the love of the divine, the passion for connection with the divine, with the passion for justice. So these prayers bring these two energies together, so to speak. And it's called Prayers from the Heart. And it's on Audible, and it's also on Kindle, if somebody wants to get on Kindle. And on Audible, Andrew Harvey, for those of you who know him, is reading these prayers. And he's a very powerful teacher and a Rumi scholar and has an incredible voice. I am also getting another book of prayer published very soon, by Tayan Lane Publication, and it's another prayer book. It's called Prayers for Peace and Justice, and they are also another collection of these prayers. So I hope some of people might want to look at them and use them. I mean, that's a way that you can read these prayers in a workshop, read these prayers in a Bible study, because these prayers will bring a discussion around all what we're talking about, and they will join our fervent need to connect with the heart of the divine, with our love of planet Earth and our care for planet Earth. So I'm hoping that people can use these prayers as a way to nurture their own inner life, but also as activists, but also as a way to start conversation. Read them on Thanksgiving. Hmm. You know, I mean, read the prayer like that on Thanksgiving.
Chris, thank you so much for being with us today. What a great pleasure to be in conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Karen, thank you, and thank you for being in conversation, and thank you for the work you do of putting out tremendously important reflections and ideas through the radio show that you have.
Oh, thank you so much. That is Chris Sade. His latest book is Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice. You can find out all about Chris and his work at theolivebranchcenter.net. And thank you for listening today. Together we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.